Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I know it's been kind of a tough weekend for the news industry because they get to roll out their old narratives and start pounding their chests on the progressive agenda. And I'm not going to do that here. As a matter of fact, as I've told you, and I went through this last week, that it doesn't really matter. We understand why we have mass shootings today. We understand why such despicable things occur. You do not get away with debasing your society without suffering consequences of evil where people choose to do harm to one another instead of trying to become a productive member of society. We have turned our backs on our fundamental principles and our moral principles as well. Fundamental principles as far as our government, it's very simple, folks. It's about individual liberty and individual sovereignty and protecting all liberty for all people. It is only the radicals, and I've told you, this is all the wiring of those on the extreme left. The ends justify the means, and they're going to use all the hyperbole. And anybody, it doesn't matter what that person's station in life is, if they're going to stand up and say, we need to take the liberties of individuals just to protect us, then they are champions of subjugation and slavery. That is the path. Historically, the empirical data is overwhelming. It goes back even beyond Rome, ancient Greece, and so forth. The facts are, when you do not have an armed public, a citizenry who can defend themselves, you will have a citizenry ripe for subjugation, because then government all of a sudden understands that it has nothing, no encumbrance in coming after you and being able to enforce or force you to doing things that you would never have done. So anyway, Those news pieces are not going anywhere. Just like all the things, just like the economy, as Trump continues with the economic war, we're going to have ripples, and we need to continue that economic war. If not, we will be subjugated to globalists. You know, I guess the good news is that China is no longer our number one trading company. Now we actually have a new number one trading company for the first time in a long time, folks, and that's Mexico. And that news is not going to go anywhere because these are very slow transitions. Now Trump actually has a big stick and leverage to force Mexico to start doing better as well, or we can start moving our trade and commerce in a different direction. And so the news really isn't going anywhere. And as you watch this stuff, and as you listen to this stuff, and as you get enthralled by this, and as you let it draw you in, you've got to remember this, that this information, what you're understanding from all of these news cycles, these news events, and the narratives, has nothing to do with solving our real problems. This is why we forge forward in giving you the citations, telling you exactly what Madison said, telling you what the framers asserted as they were defining our Constitution. Because once you understand how the Constitution was defined, and once you understand how our government has just ran rickshaw over us and has ran well outside the boundaries of the Constitution, then as you start understanding the process of republic review, you can actually see how easy it is to get the government back into compliance and how America can actually lead the world on the principles of individual liberty, individual sovereignty, and individual prosperity. Anyway, as you know, and I say this every show. This show is sponsored or also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org and RepublicReview.org. You are listening to the only show that provides the data, the information, the processes, and it takes a long time to do this. There is no 30-second elevator pitch of this is what we need to do. You have to understand. I have to educate you. You have to grasp our founding documents. There are lots of Christians out there that have a very good understanding as to why they need to read the scriptures on a daily basis. And I'll share that with you. Excuse me. The reason why scriptures are so important is so that you can understand how the concepts and doctrines of man have perverted the religious practices. You can start seeing how, by reading the scriptures, how churches are no longer practicing the doctrines that are within the scriptures. So that's why Christians read the scriptures, so that they can recognize false doctrines and actually gravitate towards churches that are actually, you know, instituting or practicing the true doctrines. Well, it's the same thing with our founding documents. Technically, scriptures are founding documents. They're the founding documents for Christianity, Judaism, Mohammedism, and so forth. Our founding documents are the fundamental principles of our governance and the definitions of what government should be doing. That is why it is so important, because once you start reading the founding documents, you can see how politicians, lawyers, and all sorts of bureaucrats, corporation leaders, all of these folks have perverted our government and have been able to do all sorts of things to us. And if we don't step in, if we're not willing to actually defend our liberties and defend the definitions of our Constitution, then the obvious is, to me, it's very clear. We will be running into a wall of governance that will completely wipe away the protections and our inalienable rights that our founding documents have guaranteed us. Those things are critical, folks. Those things need to be defended. And I'm calling upon you to make this year, make these moments now the point in time where you wake up and you actually take a stand on those same principles the framers took a stand on. If you don't take a stand, who will? And if we don't anytime soon, it will be too late, because they have been working for over a century to overthrow us. The secular progressive communists have been in America working in our education system, and they've now penetrated every single bureaucracy. They're doing whatever they choose to list to us. And I'm here to tell you that we still have the advantage, because we still have the Constitution. We just have to live and point out and enforce the definitions of that Constitution while we still have it. But it's a matter of time. Now, as you know, we have a listen line, and that's 605-562-4209. By all means, please, if you cannot stream this show because you're traveling, because you're in an environment where it just doesn't allow you to, then put a bud in your ear and just listen to the listen line. And I believe everybody has on their phones unlimited listening. So go ahead and listen, because it's either that or you got to download the podcast. Now, the podcasts are on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. Excuse me. And I do not have all of my podcast stuff from last week. I've been overwhelmed with a lot of the responsibilities that I've had in the passing of my greatest friend. And so this will continue for several weeks, if not months, because I was asked to be the executor. And so anyway, I will try to get those things up today, if not sometime this week, of all last week's podcast. But I did catch it up, so that by all means, get up there, get onto the website, and you can download the podcast. And that's how you can start hearing precisely what the founder said. we will go through kind of a capsulation of what I think are the real critical highlights that actually prove that what Congress is doing and how they're treating us and how they have elevated themselves over us is all unconstitutional. And if you understand what I am doing, I am the federal government's number one enemy because the federal government is so out of compliance to the Constitution that it requires not just a major paradigm shift, it requires a full revamping. We're not talking about, you know, just a remodeling here, changing curtains and so forth. This is knocking down walls and building on the foundations that we actually have within the Constitution. And so much of what they're doing is not built upon those foundations. They have built a house of cards, and Republic Review is the easy process of applying the appropriate wind in blowing down that house of cards. So, and excuse me, might I remind you that whenever Obama's name comes up, everybody needs to go into the chant when it's the Democratic debates and what have you. Don't forget, when Obama's name comes up, you got to start chanting, "Obama lied, he must be tried. Obama lied, he must be tried." So if you happen to be in one of those forums, then you can start driving that point home. We are at a hard break, so we will be right back and getting geared up with, I believe we're starting off with Madison of the Virginia debates. We'll be right back after this, folks. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic Review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue. And so the one thing I wanted to kind of go over is how you can support us. As everybody knows, this is important. If I don't mention this, then the new listeners or anybody else can't be reminded, I really do want to get involved. I want to support this. If you want to get involved, if you want to lead, that's what we need most of. We need leaders in your counties and your states, and you could easily elevate yourself as you become the educated person regarding the constitutional definitions. Then there's no reason why you cannot be leading in your state, because unfortunately, there are so few people. There's lots of people You know, there may be hundreds of people in your state, because if you understand the one percenters, there are less than probably 1%. Because what is 1% of America? That's 3.3 million people. And I'm telling you right now, out of everybody in America, there is less than 1% that understand the Constitution. And out of all of those folks, there is probably less than 1% that understand the concept that the Constitution is a compact. It is a contract written for and by the states, and that they, the states, are the stakeholders of the contract, and they, the states, have the authority to enforce their contract. These are founding principles that we go through on this on the show. So if you start understanding this and you become the leader in educating the people in your county and your state and say that the process for saving our Constitution, and it begins with you in your state, is Republic Review. There's no money in, we don't have a franchise for Republic Review. It is only the process of saving and enforcing our contract. That is it. It is the process that initiates first the audit at the state level. The first state that stands up and calls for Republic Review will audit the Constitution, and they will identify all of the federal government's infractions of the Constitution. I'm here to tell you, friends, over 85% of what they spend their money on social engineering and those types of programs, they have no business doing it. It is all unconstitutional. It all needs to be unraveled before we go bankrupt. The states have the responsibilities. The states are also spending the money, but see what happens. I'll just challenge you to go read a very easy book, Who Moved My Cheese? Because right now the cheese is coming from the federal government. And when the federal government no longer is providing free cheese and no longer just, you know, dictating to everybody who gets cheese and who doesn't get cheese, then you'll quickly find out that people will actually go somewhere else to get their cheese, and it won't be free anymore. They'll have to earn their cheese. They'll have to go find their cheese. And go read that. It's a very short story, but those are fundamental principles. Even Milton Friedman has made those types of comments. So once people realize that there is no more free things coming out, they'll first get mad. They'll go through the whole cycle of, what is that? I forget, you know, when somebody loses their job, or the grievance cycle, the grief, grieving. What happens is when something happens, like you lose your job, then you go into denial, and then you go get angry. And so people will get angry. They'll get out in the streets. They'll be arrested. They will be, you know, told, hey, if you do this again, you know, because we need to start educating people. You do not have a right to protest and shut down commerce, shut down people, and so forth. We arrest these folks, let them know that, hey, you know, you can't do this, and if you do this, then we will send you away for time. And you do not want to get a felony because you become a serial protester and a serial ingrate, because that's all these folks are ingrates. They have an opportunity to go apply for a job, to create wealth and or work for themselves, and or get involved in community, like church community in programs and offerings, where they can either retool themselves and start learning what they can do to contribute. We got to actually pull up our britches and run as Americans once again. We have the wings, my friends. We can fly as Americans. All we've got to do is recognize that we're Americans still. We're still that bald eagle that can soar. Anyway, so that's the first thing. Send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic, if you want to lead. There are other ways. We do need financial help. We do travel. We have to get this word out to state legislators and other leaders, party leaders, grassroots leaders, and so forth. We have a GoFundMe out on, we have a GoFundMe campaign out on GoFundMe. It's Reclaiming the Republic, and or you can just buy Red State Coffee. If you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org, that's where you'll find the link for both Red State Coffee as well as the GoFundMe campaign Both of those links will send you if you want to provide financial support. We'd ask that you would consider becoming a leader so that you can help. You can be a real contributor. So with that, let me just kind of move forward, because again, when it comes to the news cycle, we could sit here and talk all day about the same old stories, and those stories will never go anywhere. The only way we will get to a point where we finally have a, I'll just say, a solid understanding of what the heck the problems are, so we can fix them, so we can end these mass shootings, so we can end these terrible controversial things that have no business in our society. And that is by standing up for our founding principles. We have to stop the decay and the debasement and the debauchery that the progressives are ramming down our throats. With that, let me jump into, and I hope you understand why we're so focused on these definitions of the Constitution, because it is the definitions that actually help us understand how the federal government is supposed to be behaving. So this next citation is Mr. Madison. And let me see, do I have a date on this? No, I got a page number. This is on page 349. But this is Mr. Madison, James Madison, during the ratification debates in Virginia. And he says, "The second question which I proposed to consider was whether such organization be made as would be safe and convenient for the states and the people at large. Let us suppose that the subjects of its jurisdiction are only enumerated." He's putting his arms around the concept of what is the jurisdiction of the government. And he said, and I'll just repeat it, "would be safe and convenient was whether such organization be made as would be safe and convenient for the states and the people at large. Let us suppose that the subjects of its jurisdiction are only enumerated, and power given to the general legislature to establish such courts as might be judged necessary and expedient. Do not think that, in that case, any rational object could be made to it, and excuse me, any more than would be made to a general power of legislation in certain enumerated cases." In other words, they have the general power of declaring war and fighting a war. They have the general power of creating a seat of government in the District of Columbia where they have exclusive legislative powers. And that is the only place where they have exclusive legislative powers. Moving on, he says, "if that would be safe, it appears to me better and more restrictive so far as it may be abused by extension of power. The most material part is the discrimination of superior and inferior jurisdiction and the arrangement of its powers, as where it shall have original and appellate or cognizance, where it speaks of appellate jurisdiction, it expressly provides that such regulations will be made as to accommodate every citizen so far as practical in any government. The principal criticism which has been made was against the appellate cognizance as well as a fact of law. I am happy with the honorable member who presides and who is familiarly acquainted with the subject, does not think it involves anything unnecessarily dangerous. I think that the distinction of fact as well as law may be satisfied by the discrimination of the civil and common law. But if gentlemen should contend that appeals as to fact can be extended to jury cases, I contend that by the word regulations it is in the power of Congress to prevent it or prescribe such a mode as will secure the privilege of the jury by trial. And this is kind of interesting because Madison is kind of pointing out that, you know, the Congress would have the responsibility of protecting it. What really ended up happening was it became pretty obvious that they didn't want Congress with the power of protecting, because if they have the power of protecting, they have the power of removing that protection. And that is why this ended up going into the Bill of Rights. They may make a regulation to prevent such appeals entirely, or they may remand the fact or send it to an inferior contiguous court to be tried or otherwise preserve that ancient and important trial, the trial by jury. Now, Mr. Marshall then kicks in, and this is what Mr. Marshall says. Mr. Chairman, this part of the plan before us is, and there is an interruption. I apologize. I did not look at how much time I had left on the second segment. So we'll get into John Marshall. He has three citations coming up regarding jurisdiction. And so we'll kind of fly through these really quick. I may just go to the third one, just so that we can get a real good understanding of where the federal government's jurisdiction ends. And so we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so Mr. Marshall pipes in, and I'm going to kind of cut these things down a little bit. And he says, this is one of the things he says, what are the reasons of this supposition regarding what the impartiality of court's decisions, jurisdiction, and so forth. And he says, what are the reasons of the supposition? Do they draw them from the manner in which the judges are chosen or the tenure of their office? What is it that makes us trust our judges? Their independence in office and manner of appointment? Are not the judges of the federal court chosen with as much wisdom as the judges of the state governments? No, they're actually chosen based on their ideological wiring and the agendas they're willing to push, such as taking away our guns, such as forcing abortion or taking away abortion. I mean, we've become ideologically wired instead of understanding the Constitution and the limitations of the Constitution. Are they not equally, if not more, independent? If so, shall we not conclude that they will decide with equal impartiality and candor? If there be as much wisdom and knowledge in the United States as in a particular state, shall we conclude that the wisdom and knowledge will not be equally exercised in the selection of judges?
The principle on which the object of the federal jurisdiction seems to me to be founded on belief that there will not be a fair trial had in the courts. If this committee will consider it fully, they will find us it has no foundation and that we are as secure as there has anywhere else. What mischiefs result from the causes being tried there? Is there not the utmost reason to conclude the judges, wisely appointed and independent in their offices, will never countenance any unfair trial? What are the subjects of jurisdiction? Let us examine them with an expectation that causes which will be candidly tried, So in other words, what are the things that can be candidly tried by the federal government? And then determine the objection which was made by the honorable member who was up yesterday, which was Mr. Mason, who has been so fully refuted that it is not worthwhile to notice it. Anyway, so he kind of goes on and he says, these, sir, are the points of federal jurisdiction which he objects. And so he's kind of finished these points, right? And he goes, so these are the points of the federal jurisdiction. After listing them, he's kind of concluding here and he moves on and he says, with respect to its cognizance, to the federal court's cognizance, in all cases arising under this Constitution and the laws of the United States, he says that the laws of the United States being paramount to the laws of the particular states, there is no case but what this will extend to. And then Marshall says this, has the government of the United States power to make laws on every subject? That's a rhetorical question. And I'm going to answer that rhetorical question. No. They only have the powers. This has been repeated and repeated and repeated. They only have the powers to make laws regarding the enumerated powers within the Constitution. They cannot make laws regarding religion. They cannot make laws regarding health care, regarding life, regarding education, regarding energy, regarding the environment, regarding labor. I can go on and on. These are not powers that are enumerated in the Constitution. So that answers that rhetorical question. Does the United States government have the power to make laws on every subject? Absolutely not. Then he says this. He asks this rhetorical question. Does he understand it so? In other words, does Mason and do these anti-federalists understand that they have this hard limitation? Then his next question is, can they make laws affecting, so he just goes down one little avenue, can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property, such as, how, if you want to sell a car, what do you have to do? Can the federal government make the laws of what you have to do to sell in your car? Now, they are actually making laws of what you have to do in selling a home with identifying your banking and your financing and all of these other things because they have gone well beyond their enumerated powers because they have no enumerated powers regarding housing and they're making laws regarding these things. So anyway, but can they make laws affecting the mode of transferring property or contracts or claims between citizens of the same state? And I'm telling you they can't, but they are doing these things. Marshall then goes on and says, can they go beyond the delegated powers? Absolutely not. Another rhetorical question, but I'm going to answer it. They cannot go beyond the delegated powers. That is why Madison, Monroe, and even Andrew Jackson vetoed bills granting Congress the ability to create the Department of Transportation. Three presidents vetoed bills that Congress would have enlarged their power. And each president said, we do not have these enumerated powers. If you want to assume this power, we must amend the Constitution. And then Marshall says this. He says, if they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, it would be considered by the judges. So this is the ultimate answer that Marshall is giving to all these rhetorical questions. If they were to make a law not warranted by any of the powers enumerated, and I'll be very specific, I'm going to add this, to that Constitution, enumerated in the Constitution, it would be considered by the judges as an infringement of the Constitution, which they are to guard. They would not consider such a law as coming under their jurisdiction. They would declare it void, because that is the standard process of a law that is outside the jurisdiction of government. It's just declared void. That goes right back hand in hand with what I've been asserting regarding the nullification and the concept of null and void. It is the logical step in addressing an unconstitutional or an illegal law. It is just considered null and void. It is not added to the books. It's removed and stricken. And so that's why when I go through the nullification and interposition positions regarding the 1778 resolutions, it is clear that it's an act of second nature, if you want to put it in that perspective, that that's what you just do. You make it null and void, but you also have to actually go after the federal government. You have to interpose and strike it from their books. You have to arrest the evil and remove it. And that's why, if you haven't read that article, you really need to read my article regarding nullification versus interposition and what the framers were really trying to do. And so with this one citation, or the citations that I kind of just helped encapsulate for you here, it is very clear that when it comes to the not just the court, but the federal government, the president cannot make a bureaucracy self-appoint himself and create, like Nixon did, the Environmental Protection Agency. They can't just create, like Johnson did, the Department of Transportation, which actually was laid in place by FDR and or previous presidents who kept on ignoring the Constitution. Mr. Marshall goes on and says this because he wants to poke everybody in the eye, because everybody was believing that the federal court systems was going to become this all-powerful entity. And he says, "How disgraceful is it that the state courts cannot be trusted?" says the honorable gentleman. What is the language of the Constitution? Does it take away their jurisdiction? It is not necessary that the federal courts should have cognizance in all cases arising under the Constitution and the laws of the United States. What is the service or purpose of a judiciary but to execute the laws in a peaceably orderly manner without shedding blood or creating a contest or availing yourselves of force? If this be the case, where is its jurisdiction be more necessary than here? And this kind of goes down to the understanding of courts and their roles in government. We do have courts that actually cover the laws that are legitimate. But what do we do about laws that are illegitimate? If the federal government has created laws that are illegitimate, what court do you take it to? If it is not a delegated power, it has no jurisdiction in the federal government. So do you take it down to a state government? Absolutely not. You have to take it to the states and form a body of judges, which would be the combined state legislators. Those men and women serving in your state legislatures are the ones that absolutely have to decide what to do about all the illegal and unconstitutional laws. There is no court of jurisdiction other than those who have granted, as our sovereigns, these powers. Because if you look at within the framework of the Constitution, any amendment to the Constitution must be reviewed by the state legislatures. And in some cases, it goes to a delegate or a delegate convention within the states. But still, it is the state legislatures that require the passing of these amendments in the ultimate sense. And so it is them that have the responsibility. It is the state legislatures who have the responsibility to coalesce as a court of states to dictate what they are to do with unconstitutional laws that have been assumed by the federal government. So with that, we'll be right back, and we're going to talk with Mr. Innes and Mr. Randolph, Governor Randolph. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so, Mr. Innes, we're going to jump right into what Mr. Innes has to say after Mr. Marshall kind of clearly delineated the boundaries of limitations to the courts, or the federal courts, regarding the Constitution, that they're limited by enumerated powers. So I'm here to tell you folks that every time you take to the federal court, if you go to the federal court system over an issue such as public parks, over an issue such as public lands or abortion or health care, something that they have no jurisdiction because there's no constitutional powers delegated regarding those things, those are simply contrived and assumed powers, then you are surrendering to a court that has assumed these powers, and they will continue to protect those powers because they will never acknowledge that these are usurpations. The states have to step in and say, where did we give you this jurisdiction? Where did we delegate this jurisdiction and power? If we have not given you an amendment informally delegating this jurisdiction and power, then you are exercising unconstitutional and illegal law. It's really simple, folks. It's really not that hard. Once you start understanding the boundaries of the contract and that the contract defines everything, then they have to live within the contract. And so we either... the states either recognize that these are good things or these are bad things. And we have to start learning our lessons from what England was doing and historically what happens when you allow the government to control all land. Well, next thing you know, only the king can hunt in the Sherwood Forest. And so the people starve because they can't go feed themselves. And the king and the kingdom and government become the rich controllers of land. They become the wealthy and the elite because now they control everything. And they do, just like in Saudi Arabia and the rest of these theocracy, monarchies, whatever you want to call these hybrid type of evil governments, And what they do is the money that they make, they give stipends off to their folks and their people. Those are very evil boundaries. Our framers never gave our federal government those boundaries. The boundaries are defined within the Constitution. And until we delegate with an amendment, and that's what saves us, my friends, because they violated and never followed the Constitution, we have every step and recourse in forcing them into compliance. It's really simple if you understand how simple it really is. So Mr. Innes says this, but are we told we need not be afraid of Great Britain? Will that warlike, that vindictive nation lose the desire of revenging her losses and disgraces? What he's saying right there is the precise thing I've been telling you. The Revolutionary War was not over. They knew this and they understood that Great Britain was not going to just let this powerful economic force just, you know, fall away from them. Will she passively overlook flagrant violations of the treaty? Will she lose the desire of retrieving those laurels which are buried in America? Should I transfuse into the breast of Britain that armor patriar which so strongly predominates in my own? He would say, while I have a guinea, I shall give it to recover lost America. And I'm hoping that that's what everybody's position is, that if you have a penny, if you have an ounce of energy, will you not do what's necessary in protecting our Constitution by contributing to the cause of doing that? And Mr. Innes goes on and says, but says another gentleman, the maritime powers of Europe look like anxious and jealous eyes on you. While you are helpless, they will let you alone, but if you attempt to become respectable, they will crush you. They have to leave you alone because they know they can't project power over here. But as we tried to grow, they started crushing us. They started impressing us. They started taxing us. Is this language or consolidation of an American must be acquiesced to continue in this situation? We should, by this way of reasoning, sacrifice our own honor and interest of and what he's talking about is right now the states had their own ability to internationally trade and so forth. And by vesting this control of foreign trade to the general government, they were given this to dictate, you know, how they were going to tax and imports and exports and so forth. And it was only regarding commerce, the powers of commerce was only focused on foreign trade. He goes on and says, and I'll just repeat it, we should, by this way of reasoning, sacrifice our own honors and interests, or the state's honors and interests, to please those superfluous nations and promote their interest, and with whatever means of acquiring a powerful fleet, would never have a ship of the line. To promote their glory, we would become wretched and contemptible. The only way forward is to understand that we have to actually separate and stand and bond, or actually not separate, but bond together in creating. And that's one of the things that the Constitution did. It empowered the federal government to create a navy to guard our consolidated commerce interests so that the United States could ensure that we had a free trade with other nations, and not just one state over another, because obviously, Virginia might have been able to do more enforcements of its trade policies than Delaware because of the state size and the kind of purse that the differences in these states. But he goes on and says, our national glory, our honor, our interest forbid this disgraceful conduct. It may be said that the ancients who deserved and acquired glory have lost their liberty. Call to mind the many nations of Indians and cannibals that have lost it likewise. And who would not rather be a Roman than one of those hardly deserved to be enumerated among the human species? And so, understanding the Roman Republic, it was the greatest republic that had ever spread across the earth. but it was a despotic republic as well. I'm here to tell you, my friends, that America is the greatest republic since the Roman Republican Empire. The British Republican Empire was, was an attempt at trying to become like the Roman Republic, but we broke away. They never got there. And now we're in the position with the few, because Rome controlled so many different nations during their republic for almost a millennia that they were running as the rulers and the appointers and the coronators of religion over the European countries and so forth. Anyway, if you understand where we are and where they were and how they looked, they saw America going in that direction, that we could become that great republic. There's no doubt. And we have become that great republic. But we have gone well outside the means, and if we control ourselves, we can actually get back to becoming a great global republic, not in controlling every aspect of the globe, but freeing and providing liberty to every state within the globe. If you kind of understand what I'm saying, there is no reason, I've said this before, there is no reason why other nations in the world cannot go through the slow, arduous process of becoming and assimilating into the United States of America. There's no reason why Estonia can't, apply. They would just have to go through the process of changing their currencies and adopting our courts and adopting our laws and establishing themselves as a state with a state capital, setting up bicameral legislation and so forth. But it would take probably 20, 30 years for them to make these types of changes. It wouldn't be an overnight transition. But there is no reason why they would not want to embrace the protections of liberty that this hybrid constitutional republic guarantees the world. Wilson understood this. The progressives completely understood this before Wilson even got into office. That is one of the reasons why Wilson was the first to actually try to throw America under subjugation of the League of Nations. That is why FDR successfully threw us into the League of Nations, the United Nations, and that is why we're actually in a position where we are becoming subjugated to international and governance of a globalist entity. That's where they're trying to destroy us, and it is very clear. We actually possess the document, the Constitution, that everybody would love to become a partaker in. I'm just here to tell you, my friends, that if you look at where we are as a republic, where we are with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and restoring that, how great would it be if other nations actually allowed themselves to become states, independent and sovereign states, within our hybrid constitutional republic and participate and enjoy the liberties that our hybrid constitutional republic provides? Why would we not want to allow that to happen? We can talk more about that. And if you've got questions about that, if you don't like these kinds of things or concepts, engage me. info@reclaimingtherepublic. I am G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.